if you can tie your KPIs for your content marketing efforts directly into the efforts of your marketing campaigns and your marketing efforts, it's a win-win.
This is Digital Marketer.
Today, Garrett Holmes. Garrett is the head of content and product here at Digital Marketer. And he came to us from The Chive, where he was responsible for creating hundreds of blog posts that reached literally millions upon millions. He has worked on video and editorial content for brands like Netflix, Diageo, X Games, and Shell. So this week, we're turning the mic and the spotlight around onto our host, Garrett Holmes, so he can share with us what's working these days when it comes to content marketing and social media. He's going to show us how you can use social media as a proving ground to create content and how that content fits into the customer value journey. So let's get stuck in.
Hello, Garrett.
Hello. So good to be here.
Yeah, I'm excited about this conversation.
This is very, very meta.
It is meta.
The co-host of the podcast being interviewed by the other co-host of the podcast on the podcast that we co-host together.
Yeah. Well, I wrote some secret questions, so we'll see if any curveballs get you.
All right. Probably.
Okay. So, Garrett.
Yes.
We'll just start at the beginning.
All right.
This is the best place to start.
Okay.
Take me back in time, the early days of Garrett's career. How did you get from point A to, let's call this, right now in this very booth, point B?
All right. This is a fun story. So for those that don't know, I'm actually pretty young. I'm only 26. And in my short amount of time on this world, I've had some pretty awesome opportunities to do some cool things. And so I got my start in the world of hospitality. So I was enthralled by the idea of serving others. That was in my blood from day one. Mm. I remember when I was just a kid and we had, you know, family events, and I would create menus for all of our family.
Cute.
Before they came over, you know, with all the drinks that we had, all the appetizers that we had, and I would be the server. That's just what I loved to
do. I can just imagine like a menu drawn in crayon that says
exactly,
like chicken nuggets.
Would you like a slice of cheese?
Yeah.
So that was just kind of what I wanted to do. I remember I took business classes in high school, and that's all I wanted to do was be in the world of hospitality, serving people in restaurants and in hotels. And the original dream was I snowboarded for 13 years before I moved to the non-snow state of Texas. And I wanted to move to Colorado and open up a ski resort. That was the dream.
Whoa.
A big ambitious dream as a kid. But I was like, well, I got to get my start somewhere. So I went off to school. I went to Central Michigan University, and it was such a perfect school for hospitality. We had a professor. His name was Professor Gary Gagne. He's a phenomenal, phenomenal human being. But he taught me everything that I know about serving people and just the customer experience. And I took a class with him called Services Marketing. And he taught me all about what it takes to market services. And I just kind of fell in love with it. So in my college career, I had the opportunity to take a year off through working with Professor Gagne on a project that was essentially opening up a hotel for cancer patients and their families.
Wow.
So what ended up happening was there was this new breakthrough technology called proton beam therapy. And it was all about, you know, those particle accelerators. Have you ever heard of those? So like what they use to make black holes. Well, it was using those machines to shoot protons into tumors inside of a body. And then it would radiate from the inside out. So it was super, super incredible technology because it like reduced the radiation harm on the body. And so for like pediatrics, it was amazing because it didn't have to radiate growth plates. It didn't have to, you know, stunt growth of certain parts of people's bodies as kids. So it was one of 13 of these facilities in the country. And so we knew people would be coming to this facility from all over the world. And so we built a 32-room hotel next to the facility, and I took a year off of school to help open that, and that was just a crazy experience. I lived in a 44,000 square foot hotel by myself for 8 months.
Did that get a little like Shining-ish at times.
Exactly. So, funny story.
This is a Halloween episode.
Yeah. Funny story. We had wheelchairs in the hotel, and obviously I was the only one in this building. So at night I would just wheel around in wheelchairs and, like, you know, do my rounds in a wheelchair.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'd be going down the halls and I'd be just thinking about myself, you know, on a little tricycle riding through the shining hallways. But, you know, long story short, that was such an amazing experience and really validated my love for serving people and creating an opportunity for people to better enjoy their lives. It was exactly what I needed, but I knew I needed to go back to school. I needed to finish my degree. I needed to get a job somewhere outside of just that. So I went and finished my degree, and I'm from Michigan. So I took the first job that came to me as far away from home as possible. Hmm. If there was one thing that my parents taught me, it was to get as far away from Flint, Michigan as humanly possible. So I did it. I moved to Houston, Texas, and I started working for Marriott. Well, it was actually White Lodging, a management company through Marriott, but I was doing sales. And I think of myself as a pretty personable human being,
yeah.
But I don't know. Sales just wasn't for me. I missed the human experience that came along with hospitality, even though I was still in the realm of a hotel. So I had a little bit of an existential crisis. I wasn't sure what I wanted to do. And I randomly started applying for jobs, and I got an opportunity to go down and work for The Chive out of Austin, Texas. And at that time, I had been kind of independently blogging on my own, and I'd always been interested in creating videos. Throughout my entire childhood, I was creating videos and publishing to YouTube and doing all that stuff. So I knew I had this kind of affinity for content. So it was a huge, huge pay cut. I won't go into the super big details there, but, like, going and taking this job was like, yeah, come and work for a couple of months and we'll see if you're a good fit.
Yeah.
And so I was like, hell no, I'm not going to leave this good job that I have, a commission structure that I have, to go work for this. And one of my best friends called me on kind of the night that I had to decide. And he was like, listen, Garrett, I know that everyone's telling you don't do this, but I've never heard anything more you. And at that moment, I was like, screw it. YOLO, if you will. Let's go do this. So I moved to Austin, Texas, and I started working for The Chive on one of their side properties called thebomb.com. That was a pretty expensive domain.
I bet.
For them to acquire, but they wanted to create a new video website that was like curated videos from around the web and very similar to what they were doing with their blogging style. So we tried it out and I became the head editor of that website, and we spent extensive time trying to figure out how to monetize the videos that we were curating, trying to figure out different ways to get people to come to the site in the masses, but we found that we were competing with the likes of YouTube and Facebook and Instagram, who were all making this big push for video right at that time. So it was like the worst time to start a video-focused website.
Yeah.
So we tabled that, and I shifted my focus back over to just The Chive, and I wrote for The Chive for a couple of years and then started working as the homepage manager or the homepage editor, whatever you want to call it, where I was responsible for the user experience on the website and maximizing the eyeballs to the content and figuring out what it takes to manage that website. So through that, got really involved with the advertising side of the business, got really involved with creating campaigns for businesses, working with businesses like Netflix, ESPN, Diageo, Shell. I actually, with Shell Oil and Gas, they flew myself and a colleague of mine out to an oil rig. And we got to tour an oil rig and interview people who lived on the oil rig, which is just a wild experience. But that was phenomenal. Became the director of content at The Chive, where I was, you know, working with the president and the head editor of The Chive to really develop the strategy for where that business was going. And then last year, Ryan Dice hit me up on LinkedIn and was like, hey, I think you should come and check out what we've got going here at Digital Marketer. And I was like, okay. I wasn't really looking, but I was like, Ryan seems like a cool guy. he's got a couple of cool articles written about him. And it's funny, I hadn't really heard of this company, Digital Marketer, or Ryan. And then I just kind of became enthralled with the idea of this industry and what Digital Marketer was doing for a community of entrepreneurs and marketers who wanted to expand their knowledge and really better their businesses and make an impact on the world. So I was like, sure, let's do it.
Yeah.
And that's how I got to point B.
Wow. Do you think that your hospitality background kind of plays a role in content marketing? How do you see those two kind of married?
Yeah, there's so many similarities there. You know, obviously with hospitality, you want to create a great experience mm-hmm. for your customers. You want to make sure that they feel like they're at home. And I think with content marketing, it's the same thing. You know, you really want to make your audience feel comfortable where they're at. Mm-hmm. So that they become a part of your community, a part of your user base, whatever you're selling, a part of what you're doing. But I think the biggest thing that I apply in my content marketing today that I brought directly from hospitality was the importance of a first impression. Mm. So, you know, we talk about first impressions just in general in the world and how important it is. Mm-hmm. I mean, you meet someone at a networking event, you meet someone on the street and you generate a first impression of that person.
Yeah.
And until you really get to know them, that's how you think of them.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't have a desire to get to know that person, that's how you're going to think about that person for the rest of the time that you ever think about that person. Mm-hmm. So I really noticed the importance of a first impression when somebody walks into a hotel, when somebody walks into a restaurant, when somebody sits down at the table, and just that whole experience. And I said, this is directly attributable to content marketing, and it should be the focus. You know, when somebody finds your business through content, they need to feel like they're walking into the most luxurious, beautiful hotel or restaurant that they've ever been to. Because that first impression is ultimately what's going to make them decide whether to say, yes, I feel comfortable here. Yes, I like where I'm at. I want to keep going, find out more. Or I'm kind of underwhelmed. This isn't really what I was expecting. See you later. And that's how I'm going to think of the business from that point forward.
Hmm. Yeah, true.
So I think, you know, content marketing really relies on that first impression.
Yeah. So you just did a workshop.
Yeah.
Here.
At DM.
At DM. Because you work here.
Uh-huh. I do.
You have to do them. You can't say no. So you just did a workshop about a social media calendar. So let's talk a little bit about social media since you kind of run that arm.
Yeah.
Right?
Totally.
So you talk about the idea of using social media as a proving ground, is what you say. Can you explain more about what that means?
Yeah. So it's really interesting to see how social media, to kind of start from the beginning here, it's really interesting to see how social media has evolved over the past 10 years. You know, what started as kind of this wild, wild west, and in a way it still is the wild, wild west, but, you know, social media used to be this place where you publish links to your website and just drive insane amounts of traffic. And it was just like this marketing arm that was unstoppable. And, you know, Facebook realized and Instagram and all of these platforms realized that that's not what was going to be the best for their business. Mm-hmm. They weren't going to be able to make as much money by sending so many people outside of their ecosystem.
Mm-hmm.
So it was really a wake-up call for us in the social media world. You know, I remember looking at overnight drops of like 90% of our reach just because algorithms changed. Like seeing that is crazy. So the point of kind of going backwards like that is just showing how social media needs to kind of be reevaluated in terms of how we use those platforms in business. So when I say that we need to look at social media as a proving grounds, we need to look at it as an opportunity to test the waters with our audience, to test the waters with our target audience so that we know what types of content, what types of offers, what types of business works for the audience that you're going after. So using a free tool with a massive audience like Facebook to really put content out there to see how your audience responds to it is a great way to then apply that back to your business in terms of, hey, you know, looking at digital marketer, like, man, whenever we post content about messenger bots or whenever we post content about Facebook ads, like our posts just go wild.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's a really good indicator that that will directly attribute back to the offers that we create, the content that we create on the product side of our business. But also, it's just a great way to figure out the best ways to talk to your audience and how do you articulate messages to your audience. So one example of the proving ground thing that I talked about in the workshop was when I was working back at the Chive, a couple of buddies of mine, we were on social media all day, every day. That's just what we did. And we started figuring out kind of the inner workings of what made content go viral. So we were like, screw it, let's just have some fun and try to hoax the internet a little bit. Mm-hmm. So we got together in a meeting room and we said, all right, let's create a viral video. And we sat down and said, all right, what's going to work? Like, we ran through a bunch of different ideas, scenarios, and we ultimately landed. I remember my buddy Dave walked into the room and was like, let's try something like this. And we were like, oh yeah, that's great. And the idea was to, and this is so stupid talking about it in hindsight, you've seen the video, but the idea was to hire a guy who goes into In-N-Out Burger, if you're not from Texas or the West Coast of the United States. In-N-Out is kind of a famous burger joint. To go into In-N-Out, order the most ridiculous order of his entire life and eat it like an absolute maniac. Like talking, pouring strawberry milkshakes all over his burger and just taking bite after bite after bite. And we filmed this as if we were just sitting at a different booth watching this guy do this. And we launched this video completely 100% fake. I mean, even down to the sound in the video, the sound mm-hmm. that you hear in the video is a stock audio file of a fast food restaurant. And and we launched it, and within 2 days, it just started just going everywhere. I mean, it was picked up by tons of news sources. It got over 2 million views on Facebook, 2 million views on YouTube. And then a week later, we kind of revealed that we duped the internet, and YouTube didn't like that very much, didn't like the tactics that we employed. So they removed the video, all that stuff. But, you know, just this idea of learning what works in your industry and learning what people respond to is such a valuable tool to help you reach more people. So understanding the behavior of your audience through social media and using social media as a proving ground is just so valuable.
That makes sense. I mean, yeah, it's kind of like you could pay someone to write a blog post and hope that people like it.
Yeah.
Or you could tweet something out and a lot of people do like it. So then you write a blog post about it. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So you have a background, obviously, at the Chive in producing content for a really large digital publisher. So for people listening at home, what can they take away from that industry?
It's interesting because one of the biggest posts that we have here at Digital Marketer on the Digital Marketer blog, or the post that reaches the most people organically, is our 101 email subject lines that we release every year. And it's interesting that that is the number one post because it's people wanting to find out what gets people to interact more with their content. Gets more people to interact with their email. What is the thing that drives a user, a person, a human to want to open an email? And I think it's the same thing with content. You know, you look at what these media publishing sites are doing. We published, you know, must have been like 40 plus posts on our website, blog posts every day. And through that, you have a ton of data to work with. I mean, that's all I did. I analyzed our data and figured out what words worked, what headlines worked, what pictures worked to get people to click on our content, to consume our content, and to, you know, make our content reach the masses. And so us as marketers who may post, you know, a blog post a week, a blog post a month, whatever it may be, we don't have the opportunity to sift through all of that data. So looking at these publishers and what they're doing and analyzing their headlines, analyzing the imagery that they use on their sites, analyzing the way that they essentially sell their content to their audience is a great way to understand what's working in the world of content consumption on the internet. Looking at blogging in general, and if you're out there producing a blog, take note of the interesting headlines that these publishers are using. I mean, the fact that listicles are so popular is something that we shouldn't ignore because we don't like listicles. People like to consume listicles. People like to consume quizzes. People like to consume this type of content regardless of the industry that you're in. I mean, that's just what they see on a regular basis. And so when you look at your business, you're probably producing content that isn't nearly as fun as what a BuzzFeed produces or what the Chive produces. So if you're going against what they're doing and not producing content similar to the kind of format that they're publishing, it's way more of an interference in a newsfeed on Facebook. You know, people are there for entertainment. They're there for fun. And if you can engage with your audience in a way that's familiar to them, in a way that they actually want to interact on those platforms, then you've got a gold mine there. Yeah. So I think that, you know, just understanding that you can take some pointers from these people because they just sift through data all day.
Yeah, that makes so much sense. And I'll even add, like, no one has more skin in the game than someone who makes their money off of content.
Exactly.
And driving people to their site. So when we kind of touched on this a little bit, the data. So let's talk a bit about content marketing KPIs.
Yeah, yeah.
So it can often be very overlooked, an overlooked piece of the puzzle because, you know, just tracking engagement, that's kind of vanity metrics, you know, looking at organic site visits, they don't always impact revenue. So it can be difficult to find that correlation between your ROI on all this effort and content marketing. So how would you build a business case for content marketing?
Great question. It's hard when you look at content marketing as its own independent piece of the business. I see too often people creating blog posts, creating social media, hiring teams to do this, and then getting rid of those teams because they don't see the direct impact. Mm-hmm. And it's because it's a part of the puzzle. I mean, I'll just transparently go through how we work through it here at Digital Marketer. Before we look at our content marketing efforts, we say, what is our ultimate goal? So right now, you know, at Digital Marketer, we set our big goal for the next 6 months. And with our content marketing arm of the business, we have individual goals for that. So right now, we want to increase our content pixeled audience. So we want to be able to retarget more people that consume our content. So that means that we have to go out and create content that's reaching broader audiences. Mm-hmm. We have to, in a way, kind of spread our wings a little bit on our content end so that we can capture a wider audience of people to then retarget, to then go through the system and work directly with marketing to kind of influence what we're doing. So when we report on our current KPIs for the content side, it comes down to that one thing, content pixeled audience. Mm-hmm. So we look at it as a KPI that directly influences what marketing is able to do from an audience acquisition standpoint. Mm-hmm. So our organic efforts directly go out to attract a wide audience. Then our marketing team comes in, retargets those people to narrow that audience down, and then starts giving them more and more ads and taking them through that customer value journey that we talk about. So if that's how you look at content marketing and measure your content marketing, I think you're going to have a better time than trying to say, hey, I put out, you know, 5 blog posts a month. I don't get very many people to them. And I'm just not seeing any revenue, but I'm spending so much time on this. Well, how are you connecting it back to that customer value journey? You have to look at it as a piece of the puzzle instead of its own independent unit. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I could sit here and say, like, these are the KPIs that you need to look at. But really, it depends on what you want to accomplish through your entire journey. Mm-hmm. So, you know, for us, that's our content pixeled audience. You know, that comes from visits to the blog, visits to our podcast pages, as well as views on our social videos. So how can we increase the amount of people who go to those areas of our content marketing wing? Well, we put our whole focus and our whole strategy there. So that's kind of how we do it. And I've worked in areas where that was not our focus, you know, with content marketing. I mean, even just 5 months ago, six months ago.
Yeah, we had a totally different goal.
Exactly. So you have to look at your company goal and align your content marketing efforts to what feeds into marketing and then what marketing feeds into sales. Or if you're doing direct-to-consumer marketing, then what feeds into purchases. So like you just have to look at it as a system instead of an independent wing. And if you can tie your KPIs for your content marketing efforts directly into the efforts of your marketing campaigns and your marketing efforts, it's a win-win.
And I would even add, like, finding a way to include content marketing into your predictable selling system. From there, it's just like what you drive is, you know, they go through your little predictable selling system.
Yeah. Well, and another thing that we're using content marketing for here at Digital Marketer is to supplement the offers that we're putting out. Mm-hmm. I mean, if somebody gets 7 emails a week from a company, and every single one of those emails is an offer to buy something, there's no value being produced there. So can you provide value for your audience through content that you've produced to help them understand the value of your business? Mm-hmm. I mean, that to us is super, super important and something that we use to allow people to get value from us instead of going directly from, hey, nice to meet you. I mean, Ryan talks about this all the time. Mm-hmm. Hey, nice to meet you. Will you marry me? Mm-hmm. You have to take steps in between to show that, hey, this is the right fit, you know? And if you're looking at our content and saying, you know what? I feel like this isn't what I need. I need a different company. Then absolutely. I would rather, hopefully not all of our audience is saying, you know what? Maybe digital marketer is not what we need. But like, I would rather us help somebody realize that through our content so that the people that we do get into our community, the people that we do get into Digital Marketer Lab are the ones that are going to stick around and provide mm-hmm. value for the community instead of provide false optics for us to say, hey, we just got a ton of people in here, but they're all going to be gone in a month.
So looking into your crystal ball, mm-hmm. do you have it? Do you have it on you?
I do. Okay. I always keep my crystal ball in my back pocket.
Excellent. Yes. So now that we're looking into it, what do you see happening in the world of content marketing into 2019 and beyond?
We've seen this huge push for video over, mm-hmm. I feel like it's been the past 4 or 5 years now mm-hmm. that we're really, really focusing on video. I mean, if you look at the way that platforms are improving in terms of the different things that they're offering, you look at Facebook stories, Instagram stories, Snapchat, that's all video based. And then Instagram releases IGTV, Facebook releases Facebook Watch, Snapchat just talks about signing independent video series that are only on that platform. Mm-hmm. Then you've got all of these streaming channels out there who are the Netflixes, the YouTubes, the Hulus of the world. I mean, everyone's going to this video-based content consumption model. I think that there will always be a place for blogging and reading and consuming content in that way, but video is quick. We live in this world of instant gratification. And I think this is something that we've had plenty of conversations about, but instant gratification is something that we expect now. I mean, we get Amazon packages in 2 days. Hell, in Austin, you can get Prime Now, which delivers a package to your door in a few hours. Mm-hmm. You've got delivery services for every fast food chain. So, you know, you look at fast food and it's like, it used to be fast to just drive there, but now you don't even have to drive there. Yeah. It's still fast. So we live in this world of instant gratification and you can consume a video a lot quicker than you can go and find a blog post and read a blog post. Mm-hmm. So I really think that we're shifting more and more to video, but not this quick, snackable, like just passive video, but more of this long form 10 plus minute video consumption on all of these platforms mm-hmm. that gets people to stay longer. If you look at the way that these platforms are optimizing, they're optimizing for time spent on site because the more time that a user's on their site, the more money that they make. So they're obviously going to try to entice people to stay on the site longer. Look at YouTube. They've enticed creators to create videos that are 10 minutes or longer because then they can place one pre-roll and then mid-roll ads throughout. Mm-hmm. So the creators are making more money, YouTube's making more money, and the content is longer. Another side of it is something that Ryan talks about all the time, and that's, okay, if a user or somebody finds a video that's 10 seconds and watches it on your Facebook channel, shares it maybe, chances are they're not even going to know who posted it. They're not mm-hmm. even going to know what's it for, like all of this stuff. But if you post a 10-minute video and then you have, you know, 500 people that watched all 10 minutes of that video, that's 500 people who are super invested. 10 mm-hmm. minutes is a long time to give up. Yeah. So now you know if you're going to retarget all of these people who watched your video, the ones that watched it 10 minutes versus the ones who watched it 3 seconds are so much more likely to interact further with your brand, mm-hmm. to become a customer of your brand instead of retargeting all of these people who are essentially strangers to your brand and see you as a stranger as well. So I really think long form video content is the way of the future. I just think there's so many signs pointing that way, but I could be wrong. I mean, there's still so much value in written content and SEO and blogging, and we're doubling down on it right now. So it's like, it's going to take a while before that takes over completely. But I think, you know, long form video content is the way of the future.
Totally. So we're nearing the end.
Uh-oh.
This is a favorite question. I'm going to put a little twist on it.
All right.
So the question usually for those of you who may be listening for the first time is, what would you tell your 25-year-old self?
Uh-huh.
If you heard the beginning, Garrett is 26.
Uh-huh.
So
looking back a year.
Looking back a year. So I'm going to change it to Garrett at the Marriott.
All right.
Little first gig. What would you go back and tell tiny Garrett?
Yeah. It's that simple idea of taking care of yourself and the time that you have outside of the work that you do. Work is something that drives us all. If you're listening to this podcast, I guarantee that you're business focused and work drives you. But it's so important not to forget the external things in life that also drive you.
Mm-hmm.
An example is last year, I sold all my musical instrument, and I played guitar for 10 plus years. And selling that instrument was what I felt was the right move. I was moving. I was focusing on other things. It wasn't bringing me as much happiness. And after I sold that, I realized I made such a big mistake because I wasn't prioritizing the things in life that brought me happiness outside of work. And I mean, I know that's like philosophical, but I just think it's so important, you know, when you talk about mental health and just mental well-being, to have experiences that bring you joy outside of your work life so that you can be intentional about doing those things and be intentional about knowing when you're at work and when you're at home so that you can be a better person in both of those places. So that's what I would tell myself.
I love that. And I'm just going to add, because I recently had this conversation with my therapist,
yeah,
who I love and she's amazing. But when, you know, you have like a passion that drives you to like help others, and that's probably, hopefully, most likely what your business is doing. You know, if you're an entrepreneur, you have that passion to help others. But the things that bring you joy don't necessarily have to be the things that require output. Like, you really need something that nourishes you and allows inputting to fill your bar back up.
Yeah.
So, yeah, definitely find those things. Me and Garrett have a lot of philosophical conversations.
We do. This isn't the first time we've talked about this. No doubt.
Garrett, this was amazing. Where can people find out more about you?
Yeah. Well, I'll send everyone to the Digital Marketer blog.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, that's one of our best touch points. If you aren't familiar with the Digital Marketer brand, that's a great place to start. You can find me on LinkedIn. If you have any questions, follow up from this, connect with me, shoot me a message. I'm happy to talk through that. And yeah, I did a workshop here on building out a social media strategy for your brand that works for you. So if you are interested in doing that, that was a great workshop and it was a lot of fun. And
that was.
You can head on over to digitalmarketer.com to find out more about that.
Yeah. Did you also see that someone already said they had 200% increase in engagement after implementing their strategy?
That's awesome. Yeah. That's so awesome.
That's just what we do.
That's what we do.
Cool. Well, thank you guys so much for listening today. Garrett, thank you for
joining
me.
This was so much fun.
This was.
I love it.
Yeah. If you guys like what you hear, give us a review. Tell us what you think. Give us constructive critiques. We love to hear from you. What we could do better, what you want to know more about, what you want to tell us about, what nourishes you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Cool. Bye.
Bye.
See you next Thursday.
You've been listening to the Digital Marketer Podcast. Whether you're an entrepreneur, an agency, or part of a marketing team, we're here to help. For show notes and resources, go to digitalmarketer.com/podcasts. Thanks for listening.
Hey, DM listeners, if you're running a Black Friday or Cyber Monday special, listen up. because Digital Marketer just released our Canva Holiday Promo Pack. It includes almost 200 templates that you can use to make the graphics for all your upcoming holiday specials and three unique design themes for each holiday. The promo pack is usually $27, but you can get it today for free. Check the show notes for the link to download, or you can go directly to digitalmarketer.com/LP/holiday templates. That's digitalmarketer.com/LP/holiday templates.